This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Since conflict is an inevitable reality of our life, it's important to know how to respond when we are in conflict with each other. How should we respond when we're the one who offended the other party? Well, the book of Proverbs gives many reminders to the believer about how we can avoid conflict in the first place. Today, Pastor Peter Cushman will begin a sermon titled, Responding as the Offender. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
It's a privilege to be able to continue our series in dealing with conflict, redeeming conflict. It's a privilege to follow up on what Pastor Ben said last week, sharing our first message. He laid the foundation for our series. So we look forward to developing this over the coming weeks. I'm going to start with something slightly anecdotal as we turn our attention toward conflict resolution. So Pastor Ben laid the foundation. He helped us understand the nature of conflict, conflict originating in the first act of sin in the Garden of Eden. He gave some really pertinent examples for how often conflict seeps into our relationships and confronts us in our own lives, and gave us a glimpse of where we're going and how we can move forward by God's grace. But this week, we're turning to our response, and really our response as the offender. So this week, if we summarized some of the questions that we're handling in the content of our series, this week, we're going to focus on our response as the offending party in the conflict. Next week, we're going to focus on our response as the offended party in the conflict. Let me just say the title is a little bit of a misnomer, because in any given conflict, there's give and take. So in most all conflict, it's probably true that you have offended the other person, you've sinned against them, and they've sinned against you. So these principles usually apply to each one of us in any given conflict. But as we turn our attention towards conflict resolution and taking ownership of our part, let me start with something anecdotal, and maybe you can identify with this morning or this evening. One of my favorite examples of conflict resolution comes from the animated superhero comedy film Megamind. If you've seen the film, you probably know where I'm going with this. But after a fallout with his head henchman, Megamind, the supervillain turned superhero, he goes back to the secret lair, throws open the door, and shouts into the darkness, "All right, minion, you were right. I was less right." And that maybe that's how you feel in a particular conflict in which you find yourself entrenched and you're trying to think about your responsibility and how you can move forward towards resolution. And humility is going to be a significant part of that. But maybe that's as far as you've gotten. You know, you were right. I was less right. But hopefully, as we take a survey in the book of Proverbs and we look at a collection of Proverbs or a compendium, we can see how we can take action for our part, take ownership of our part of the conflict, and see God by his grace move things towards resolution, to pacify the situation and to move towards reconciliation. Again, we're focusing on our response and taking ownership for our part. All right, so we're going to develop this in three steps. And the first step is preventative maintenance. You know, what's the best way to solve a problem? It's to hedge it off, right? To see it before it comes and to avoid it. Let me just try to orient you a little bit to the book of Proverbs and the nature of Proverbs before we dive into some of these texts. One thing that Proverbs is very concerned to inculcate into our living as we try to walk in the fear of the Lord is the quality of prudence. A prudent person, according to Proverbs, has the ability to see the danger coming in the future and make the right choices in the moment to avoid it. And Proverbs has a lot to say with regard to acute sin struggles or temptations in our lives, and especially conflict. So what Proverbs wants to do for you and for me this morning is to equip us to spot the danger in the future and make prudential steps to skirt around it, and in wisdom, walking in the fear of the Lord, to avoid it. So our first step is a step of preventative maintenance. Let's state the obvious here. You'd do better to avoid conflict altogether. And Proverbs gives us some excellent supporting reasons to simply stay out of it, to avoid conflict. And I think we should, you know, we should really consider these reasons. We should think long and hard here for a couple of different cultural current reasons. And the first I'd say is this: we live in a society that thrives on conflict. You know, there's a reason why tabloid talk shows and trash TV is an entire subgenre of film. People just love to watch other people have all their dirt and dirty laundry exposed on television just to see the conflict that erupts and the things that are exposed, right? People are actually making money off that, which is tragically sad. There's a kind of person who feeds on controversy and sensation. And this genre, entertainment forms like this one, feed that craving. Let's also consider the fact, as we think about conflict and how we should handle it from a biblical worldview, that the principles that we discuss tonight apply not only to our flesh and blood relationships, but also to our online presence and our online relationships, right? I think that's important to remember in the day and age in which we live. You know it. I know it. Just because I'm looking at a screen and typing on a keyboard and not a flesh and blood individual, that doesn't give me license to jettison what I know about the fear of the Lord and how I should live life before the face of God, right? So these principles regarding conflict and our relationships and the way we engage and other people apply just as much online. They're probably more relevant online because we think, you know, we can have a tendency to think we can remain anonymous or distant from a real living relationship if we're sitting behind a computer screen or typing on our phone. So as we go through these principles, let's try to think of applications in those directions. And while we're on the subject of the internet, let me also say that technology and culture has radically changed the way that we think about relationships and we move within them. So just consider for a minute, how many online friends do you have? You know, I'm looking at Mr. Jerry there. He might not be a social media user and have as many online friends as some of the avid social media young people. But think, how many online friends do you have? 1,000? You know, if you're a Bible college student, your number is really high. If you've been out of college for a while, Garrett Martin said on Sunday, people start to defriend you. So maybe that number is dropping. But that kind of phenomenon has maybe gotten us to think that relationships are disposable and expendable, right? How many friendships do you really need? Right? But if we're thinking from a biblical worldview, every one of those individuals is made in the image of God and they matter. They have a true dignity and worth, and every relationship is significant and important, bar none. You know, there are no exclusions to that rule. So that's also something we ought to think of and be mindful of when we think about the perspective of Proverbs and a biblical worldview informing our thinking. You know, just think, if you lived in the ancient world or if you lived in the first century, if you lived in the Bible times and you were from a village of, say, a few thousand people, and throughout the entire course of your life, maybe you only traveled a few hundred miles from your home. You don't really have the option of burning bridges and just moving on to another group of friends or moving on to other individuals. But those living, breathing relationships from your hometown become very important. It's the stuff that life is made of. And that's truly how the Lord wants us to live life in this world, that people have a kind of dignity and worth because they're made in the image of God and every individual matters. And therefore, conflict and any conflict that is damaging or disrupting those relationships is vitally important to God and ought to be vitally important to us. God made us to live in communion with one another in a true, genuine community, a community of faith. And so let's soak in what God has to say about Proverbs that dictates how we operate in those relationships. We're going to look at several different Proverbs together, which are printed on the handout. We do have more handouts up here. Don Bishop said, got them. If you wave your hand, if you didn't get one, we can get one to you. I do want to make sure you have one of those so that you can look on. The Proverbs that we're going to walk through are printed there, and I would love it if you would also find them in your copy of Scripture. Maybe that'll just help you warm up the book of Proverbs, but they're printed there for convenience, if indeed that would be helpful to you. All right, avoid conflict. Now we're getting on to the reasons for which we ought to avoid conflict. And the first is plain, but let's state it anyway. The first is conflict displeases the Lord. All right. Why should we avoid conflict? Plain and simple, because conflict displeases the Lord. Take a look with me at Proverbs 6. Please open there. While you're going to Proverbs 6, let me just give a general reminder of the way that the book of Proverbs operates. Proverbs instructs us of how to live life in the fear of the Lord. It has a God-fearing kind of worldview. So it's trying to shape the way that we look in the way that we look at things. It's trying to inculcate wisdom in us that will shape our behavior moving forward. It wants to put a certain kind of lens over our eyes through which we'll see, assess, and evaluate the world that we live in and act accordingly. Let me also remind you by nature what Proverbs are. Proverbs are maxims for life. So the biblical genre of Proverbs is not unlike just the modern day kinds of Proverbs that we use. We use proverbial sayings, which are like street wisdom, that are designed to be applied at certain times, and they're not necessarily Loctite cause and effect promises. You know, Proverbs aren't necessarily saying, you do this, and this is the automatic response every time. But they're saying, generally speaking, if you're shrewd, this is the way that life works, and a wise person will know which proverb operates at any given time. And proverbs are meant to be pithy, catchy sayings. They're supposed to stick in your mind and be something that you savor and you turn over in your mind and you think of. So they're supposed to be memorable sayings. So I could tell you, if you do regular maintenance over the course of time, then you'll be spared from massive expense and devastation. Or I could just tell you, a stitch in time saves nine, right? It's a punchy saying that means something, and the wise will know how to apply it. Or I could tell you, if you have too many leaders, if you have too many bosses giving instructions at one time, it's just going to muddle things up. There's going to be a lot of confusion and not a lot of productivity. Or I could say, too many cooks in the kitchen spoils the soup, right? And you know exactly what I mean by that. But then someone might come along and say, well, I thought many hands make light work. Right? That's another proverbial saying that gives us street wisdom for how to live life. And you got to know which proverb to apply at which time for the desired outcome. And the book of Proverbs works that way. It gives nuggets of wisdom for those who live in the fear of the Lord to be savored and thought through and applied to particular circumstances. But it's not telling us, if you do this in a formulaic way, you will experience this exact outcome like a laboratory experiment every time. So keep that in mind as we look at these proverbs and follow their instruction. Sadly, you might be entrenched in some kind of conflict and you're thinking about what Proverbs says and you say, okay, I'm going to give a soft answer and that's going to pacify the situation, and it doesn't work. Or you think, okay, I'm going to follow what Proverbs says and I'm not going to gossip about that individual because I know that's a key inciter of conflict, and it doesn't work. The conflict is still there and you don't reach the desired resolution. Keep in mind what Proverbs is promising us. Generally speaking, we apply these truths to our lives, we will achieve these outcomes. But there are sometimes other variables in the equation, unforeseen, maybe unknown. All right, look with me here as we get to our first supporting reason. Conflict displeases the Lord at Proverbs 6. I want to do this one briefly and then move quickly on to the next one. Let's pick up the reading in Proverbs 6:12. I will just preface this with, some of this language is Proverbs discourse language. When Proverbs uses anatomy, that is one of Solomon's techniques for delivering wisdom. He talks about the feet of the wise and what they do with their feet, what they do with their eyes, what they do with their mouth. He also talks about the wicked and what they do with their feet, what they do with their eyes, what they do with their mouth. And that's a way that wisdom wants to instruct us. And that sometimes you'll get these numerical lists in the book of Proverbs. There are six things and there are seven things. And that's another literary device signaling a wisdom saying. Proverbs 6:12. A worthless person, a wicked man, goes about with crooked speech, winks with his eye, signals with his feet, points with his finger, with perverted heart devises evil, continually sowing discord. Therefore, calamity will come upon him suddenly. In a moment, he will be broken beyond healing. There are six things that the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, and feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, and one who sows discord among brothers. The item that I want you to look at in those lists detailing what the wicked man is like is one who sows discord among brothers. So you see it, first of all, in the first list, the second part of verse 14, which is the final item in the list. And again, you see it as the seventh item in the list in the next section in verse 19. So Proverbs uses a couple of synonymous terms for conflict, discord, strife, divisiveness. So in terms of Proverbs, when we're thinking about conflict, a shorthand definition from the book, Ben gave us an excellent definition last week. He also talked about an important distinction between a kind of healthy, constructive disagreement and destructive disagreement. And when Proverbs talks about conflict or discord among brothers, that's what it's talking about, divisive, destructive disagreement, right? So that might function like a helpful shorthand definition as we think about what Proverbs has to say. It's warning us against divisive and destructive disagreement, right? Now, what I want you to notice about these lists is one who sows discord among brothers, so an inciter or an instigator of conflict, somebody who irritates conflict, that person is reserved for the last most prominent item in the list. So there are six things that the Lord despises, yea, seven that are an abomination. And the crescendo of the list is one who sows discord among brothers. And it appears twice in the last place, the place of prominence in both of those lists. You know, among other things like hands that shed innocent blood and lips that speak deceitful things. So think about that. The most prominent position of things that are an abomination to the Lord is one who sows discord and divisiveness among brothers. This just elevates for us really what kind of a heinous sin, conflict, damaging, destructive, divisive conflict is among the faith community. It's really despicable in the eyes of God. Okay, so why should we avoid it? The first reason is very simple. It despises the Lord. The next reason is it's damaging. Wow, you came all the way to church to learn these things. I know these are plain things, but they're supported in the book of Proverbs. Let's look at Proverbs 17:14 next. Why should we avoid conflict? You know, that preventative maintenance step. Not only is it dishonor the Lord, it's damaging. All right, listen to this image in Proverbs 17. The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so quit before the quarrel breaks out. You can see the conflict synonyms in the verse, strife or quarrel. Again, we're talking about damaging, discordant disagreement, right? So this verse compares a leaky sieve with the inciting moment of conflict. When a dam retaining water has a slight leak, the mounting pressure will eventually burst and cause catastrophe. So this verse admonishes us to resolve conflict immediately. Don't let it escalate. Head it off, right? So this verse is encouraging us. It's admonishing us that as soon as you sense that the tension in the relationship is ratcheting up and things are getting heated, or the conflict is the disagreement is becoming damaging and divisive, immediately plug the hole. Stop it before it starts, because like mounting pressure in a leaky dam, it's going to burst and cause devastation and destruction. Right? And we all know what this is like. We all know what it's like when an argument ratchets up and it starts to escalate and there's outbursts of temper, maybe threats, maybe really regretful choices, things you look back on you wish you'd never said or you would have never done. So this is what this proverb has in mind. It's saying plug the hole before there's a real problem here. Right? So Proverbs also gives us some very practical advice about how to plug the hole before the intensity of the conflict grows too severe. Proverbs 15:1, this is a familiar passage, a soft answer. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger, right? So if you just want to make it worse, fight back. But if you want to pacify the situation, give a soft answer. Another proverb encourages us to speak gracious and judicious words or persuasive words. This is Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16:23 through 24 says this. The heart of the wise makes his speech judicious or winsome and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Gracious words are like a honeycomb, sweetness to the soul and health to the body. So speaking graciously and persuasively pacifies a situation and de-escalates the conflict. And that's exactly what you want, right? We're going to develop this idea more a little bit later. But in any given conflict, we have to reach a point where we care more about the person. Pastor Ben talked about this in his message, a saint, a person created in the image of God. We care more about the individual than we care about winning the argument or making our point. And if that really is true, then we're going to want to take action in the conflict, in the fight, to de-escalate and start moving towards a solution to the problem rather than just worsening the problem or irritating the problem with our words. So again, this is a preventative maintenance step. If there's a leak in the dam, plug the hole before there's something catastrophic happens, something you really regret. Okay, I'm going to read, actually, let me back that up. I'm going to take that away, and I'm going to read a couple more texts that encourage us with the reality or warn us about the reality of the dangerous consequences of Proverbs. Look at Proverbs 26:17 next. Proverbs 26:17. Again, conflict is damaging. This one is, again, familiar. Whoever meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a passing dog by the ears. All right. And if you want to think of the real life situation of this proverb in the ancient world, you shouldn't be thinking about a nicely groomed doodle on the swamp rabbit trail. You take that dog by the ears and it's just going to lick you. You'll be thinking of a rabid dog in the ancient Near East in the Medina there. It's probably diseased. He's mangy. If you grab that dog by the ears, there's no way you're not going to get bitten, right? You're going to get hurt. And the proverb is making a comparison between that foolish action, which is only going to cause harm and self-damage, and meddling in a quarrel that's not your own, right? So we might put this in terms, if we were going to extend the metaphor, we could call this the dog in the fight principle. You know, if you're thinking about engaging in a conflict that's not your own, you should pause and really ask yourself, do I have a dog in the fight here? You know, is this really my problem? Some people have said, well, if you're not part of the problem, or if you're not part of the solution, if you're not part of the initial conflict, or you're not part of the solution, it's probably not your place to enter into it. But sometimes these things are, it's not so easy to think through that. Am I really a part of this problem? Am I potentially a part of this solution? Could I help move this conflict towards resolution? Is this something I should step into? Is this something that I should avoid? In any given situation, you need real and serious wisdom to make that determination. But this is warning us that you shouldn't be, you know, going in loaded for bear, just eager to get involved in other people's problems, because typically that only results in harm, right? So our default switch should be, at all costs, I'm going to avoid conflict because I know it's damaging, it's destructive, it's divisive, it doesn't please the Lord. So I just need to stay out of it. Right. And again, this is probably an area where we could all do well to think of our online engagement. Just because there's an issue that's become a problem online and it's widely known, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's my problem. Right. But these things are going to take wisdom. OK, let's look at Proverbs 18:19 next. And remember, we're talking about the damaging nature of conflict. Proverbs 18:19 says this. A brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling like the bars of a castle. So the conflict synonym there is quarreling, dangerous, destructive disagreement. And what this is telling us is if someone is offended, even a close relationship, a dear relationship, a brother offended, it's like the bars of the castle go up. You know, the battle lines are drawn up, the conflict is entrenched, and you're lobbing missiles at each other.
Thanks, Pastor Peter. We'll continue this lesson next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Pastor Peter Cushman, is the pastor for missions and connections at Palmetto Baptist Church. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.